It's good to have your company. My name's Simon Smart. You're listening to Life and Faith from the Center for Public Christianity. Well, have a listen to this quote. My drive in life is from this horrible fear of being mediocre. And that's always pushing me. Because even though I've become somebody, I still have to prove I'm somebody. My struggle has never ended, and it probably never will. The New York pastor, Timothy Keller, quotes this in his book, Counterfeit Gods. It's actually a quote from Madonna, of all people, about what's driving her. It's a fear of the mediocre, a desire for achievement. It's certainly a desire that's pushed her to great heights. Keller uses Madonna's quote to explore what he calls the idol of success. And we'll be talking about idols today. I'm with Justine Toe. Hi, Justine.
Hello.
First of all, let's talk about what an idol actually is.
Yeah, so I've been reading this book by Tim Keller, and we can really see what an idol is in that quote from Madonna. You know, it's what drives you, what pushes you. And I suppose we can think about it as whatever is most important to you in your life. You know, what gives you meaning, what gives you purpose. And it needs to be something that you value so much that you base your identity on it. It becomes your hopes and your dreams, and it gives you that ultimate sense of who you are. Now, Christianity, of course, regards idols as whatever you love, value, and treasure in place of God. So, you know, if idol has too much religious baggage for you, then, you know, you can strip it away and say, well, we're talking about people's issues, right? Or people's addictions, people's problems. These are the kinds of words that we can replace idol with. But Keller makes some really startling observations about idols. He says that they're not just bad things that we have to be on the lookout for, so addictions to drugs, alcohol, etc., but also good things like love, family, success, achievement. He says that these things can become idols as well because they're not just good things, but good things that have been turned into ultimate things. And once they do that, they're in danger of becoming idols.
Yeah, so in that quote from Madonna, even though success isn't a bad thing in itself, when it becomes totally important or all-consuming, then it would be what we'd call idol worship. But this isn't just a problem for some people, is it?
I think that we have so many idols, so to speak, in our culture. You know, we worship romantic love, we worship beauty, we worship being young, we worship sex, freedom, achievement, success, etc. You know, all these things, they exercise a really strong hold on us. And what Keller does really well in this book is he identifies that everyone has idols. He says that the business world, for example, you know, worships profit. The art world worships self-expression. And he says that traditional cultures and societies, they worshipped the family, the clan, etc. Whereas, you know, today we worship being an individual, being free.
Now, Timothy Keller is really good at helping people to identify these issues or idols that they have in their lives.
Yeah, totally. He has a little bit of a section at the back of his book where he says, you know, this is how to diagnose your idols. Mm-hmm. So, for example, consider the statement, if I have something, then I'll be happy, fulfilled. Or you can flip it, you know, if I don't have, fill the blank, then my life will have no meaning. So, you know, really,
we can all do that.
How do you answer that? Yeah.
Lots of things that we could put in for both of those statements.
Absolutely. And if that's too hard to think about, then, you know, he says, why don't you consider what you do with your time, what you do with your money, and also what you daydream about. It's really interesting, actually.
It's a bit confronting, isn't
it? Yeah. But the thing that really got me was when he said, what makes you uncontrollably angry, anxious, or despondent? Because that's like, you know, you can imagine if you're having this much of an extreme reaction, then something is getting so close to you and you can't handle it. So you're immediately on the defensive, you lash out.
It's controlling you in that situation.
Absolutely. And if you really want to know, actually, what your idol is, you have to ask your friends and your family and then really resist the urge to fight back when they identify it immediately. I can speak from experience, actually. So you said before, Simon, you know, what's controlling you, right? Like an idol would control you. Now, we can see in that Madonna quote that she is controlled by her desire to prove that she's somebody. You know, it burdens her. She even says, you know, my struggle has never ended and it probably never will. So we can see here that her success is an idol because it takes up so much energy and effort in her life and because it's what she bases her identity on. Now, I've once heard that idols always make promises that they never deliver on, you know, and this shows us that, you know, everyone's always pursuing something and they're actually always being disappointed by it at the same time. So we are controlled by this promise of fulfillment that never eventuates.
It's an enslaving thing in that sense, isn't it?
Absolutely.
If you can't sort of get away from it, but it never fully satisfies. Okay, so we went out and asked some people on the street what they strive for in order to give them meaning and significance. Let's listen to what they had to say.
I would say friends and family, as well as a good job, I suppose. I'm very happy in my work, so it gets me out in the morning.
Just living in a new city and learning new cultures and meeting new people constantly. Every weekend there's something to do. It's just exciting.
Shopping, working, and helping my family.
Career and travel is my achievement, to make sure I have a steady career and eventually buy investment property and have housing, as my dad would always say, buy property.
Finish uni, I'm going away at the end of the year for 6 months, so at the moment it's working towards that and setting myself up for a good holiday.
If I won the lottery, I'd buy a garage full of cars and quit my job and spend my days fixing cars and selling them off.
One thing that would give you a life, really make your life complete, what would that be?
Having a baby.
Having a baby?
Yes. Yeah. I've been trying for about 12 years. And about 13 IVFs, so that would be very good for me.
I suppose most people is the financial freedom, I suppose, if not having any money worries.
Just to find a good job and find someone and end up having a family of my own.
Well, some people mentioned love. Surely that's not a bad thing, Justine. What's the problem with love?
I'm not actually trashing love, believe me. I think love is fine, really. It's our obsession with romantic love, however, that is the problem. We have this idea, this cultural idea anyway, of, the one person, the soulmate, the person who can complete us. And I think that we can really see this obsession at work in the wedding industry. Marriage is in a bit of trouble, like a lot of marriages end in divorce, and yet we invest so much into the wedding process. And, not only that, but romantic comedies, even the idea of, happily ever after. We think that we're this cynical bunch of people who don't believe in that anymore, but I think we kind of do. And also, the horror that people have at arranged marriages as well, right? Because it completely challenges our idea that marriages are all about love.
The older you get, you realise that you can see some sense in that type of thing for the way your understanding of marriage changes and what it is. If it's not this great romantic dream, then you can see how it could make sense, although I'm kind of glad I didn't have one myself.
Keller quotes Ernest Becker, who makes a really interesting point in this book. He says that we desire what's called apocalyptic romance. So he says that we look to love and sex to give us meaning and transcendence that we used to have when we believed in God as a culture, broadly speaking. So, we might think that only girls have this issue, right, this desire for apocalyptic, world-shaking sort of romance. But I think guys have it as well, in this idea of the perfect girl, what she'll look like,
Yeah. Now, perhaps it's obsessive need for love that's the issue. Does the same thing go for money, do you think?
Well, Keller really observes very keenly that no one can actually see their own greed, first and foremost. And, after watching Q&A, the panel discussion show a couple of weeks ago, I really agree. The panel was asked the question, why is Gina Rinehart so greedy? So we know from her she's like this mining magnate, billionaire, has something like 29 billion. She's Australia's richest woman, could be, the richest person in the world one day. And she wants to build the biggest iron ore mine in Australia. So, why is Gina Rinehart so greedy? And now, what I find this interesting is that Keller says that we only compare ourselves with people in the same bracket as us. Okay, you don't compare with people who are millionaires if you're just living in the suburbs with a decent house, etc. So you don't actually compare with people who are out of your league. And I think it's the same with greed. And where this relates to Rinehart is that her greed offends us because she has so much money. But I wonder whether we have this massive blind spot about our own money. And so it's easier to point the finger at other people rather than really examine ourselves first. I think we can also see this in the Occupy movement. Now, it's been chanting about the way the 1% live at the expense of the 99%. And then I saw this article in Foreign Policy that basically says that in global terms, if you're in the West and you earn about $30,000 a year, then you're part of that 1%, surprise. Mm. So in some ways, I think we're all greedy, but it's much easier to point out greed in other people.
You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity.
What's the thing you most dream about, daydream about, the thing you'd wish for the most?
That my family stays healthy, and that I dream to get my career going at a young age.
To try and achieve the goals that I set in place, I think, is a good thing.
If I had no financial worries, if I lost my family, then it would take a lot to get over that.
Friends and family, if I lost that, then yeah, be a bit dark.
Today there's a whole other world and people and civilization, you know, away from Australia, away from here. It's completely, I don't know, mind-boggling to me that there's a whole other society and world going on. We had no idea about it. We do, but, you know. So I think to explore that and look at that would be really interesting.
I suppose religiously, I was brought up Church of England, but that was back in the UK. Here, I haven't gone to church as often as what maybe my mum would like.
Because I've been travelling to Laos and stuff, and some of the homes there are pretty bad, so go through Africa maybe, and just, you can donate money, but if you can see where it's needed to go, and then you can send stuff over there, what they actually need, to be a lot better.
The Centre for Public Christianity, Beyond Religion.
But what about something like success? That's a good thing, isn't it? And even if it can become an idol, like the example of Madonna, what do we do with success?
Well, I think many of us are achievement addicts, absolutely. And here's where you can see how idols turn good things into toxic things. Now, from speaking with friends and, you know, from my own experience as well, if you're an achievement addict, then you only ever feel as good as your last business deal, okay? Your last win, if you're an athlete, your last book, okay? Or article in my case, if I ever get around to writing a book. The holy grail of achievement. Now, Madonna puts this idea well, you know, she's only as good as her last album, the last, you know, front cover that she made, etc. Now, this ultimate assurance that she wants, that she's okay, that she's accepted, loved, etc., that never arrives. And so this shows all the problems with this way of valuing yourself, because it's completely insecure. It is always bound by the circumstances around you and comparing yourself with other people. And it also makes us think that, you know, like our security, my security, your security, lies in my own strength, in your strength, my own intelligence, my own performance as well.
Yeah, and in the case of, you use the example of Madonna, it can only be downhill from here.
Oh, yeah, she's at the top, and she's been superseded, you know, by Gaga and Britney Spears, etc. And so there's increasingly, you know, what some people might call, I don't know, desperate, perhaps, attempts to remain on top.
So even when, and that would apply to so many different areas, even when you've achieved great things, there comes a day when that starts to disappear as well. So imagine if people are listening to us and thinking about their own lives, and perhaps the cure or solution for this sort of thing. Is it all about being sort of cold turkey from whatever the idol is in your life?
I think it depends on the situation, actually. I do believe that it's always important to address the underlying kind of spiritual issues, I suppose, that the idol or the issue brings up. Because otherwise, you know, changes that you make are only ever going to be cosmetic. They're only going to be at that surface level rather than be really deep. And, you know, you don't always address those underlying issues if you just go cold turkey on it, as you put it. Keller would say that if the only way you feel that you can master your idol is to completely avoid it, he says that it's still exercising the same amount of control, except you're not just, you know, living it out. You're withholding it, and then that, but it's still kind of running your life essentially.
So, Justine, we hear a lot about moderation these days. Are you suggesting that that is part of the answer to this problem?
You know, I really don't think it's the answer to this particular problem. I think that it overestimates our ability to act rationally, to first identify, you know, all these unconscious impulses in our lives and then to act on them. And I think it also underestimates the way that our idols can duck and leave us in particular areas but then crop up again somewhere else.
Yeah, they re-emerge in a different form.
Yeah, absolutely. So having reflected on this book, I think the solution is to not love the things in our lives like work and family, but putting God in his rightful place, for me especially, given that I'm a Christian. So once you get God in his rightful place and everything else, you know, falls into place and it all works beautifully, not one thing will exercise a big influence on our life. So, you know, this is not an easy process, obviously. It's a lifelong process. And I suspect that it's a process that can only happen in the context of family and friendship and a good support network. So if you're a Christian, then your church would be the place to go to as well.
For more Christian perspective on contemporary life, publicchristianity.org.
Well, thanks, Justin. There's a lot to think about there in terms of idols in our own lives. The book you were talking about was Timothy Keller's book, Counterfeit Gods, When the Empty Promises of Love, Money and Power Let You Down. It's worth checking out.